We're starting at the bottom of Kuf Lamed Vav Amud Bet. There, the Gemara left off with the disagreement between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan believes that Kinyan HaPeirot Ki Kinyan HaGuf Domi. That means that when you have some sort of leasehold in the property, that it grants you rights or greater rights in the Gufa Karka. Discussed yesterday, meaning either if there's no offsetting force, or possibly grants you some form of Gufa Karka to produce the Peirot that you have there. On the other hand, Rish Lakish believes Kinyan HaPeirot Lav Ki Kinyan HaGuf Domi. The leasehold is completely separate from the principal. And the question that was presented by Rabbi Yochanan was the daisy chain matana, a gift that was given to 1, 2, and 3, and 2 passes away, predeceases number 1, and then the property cannot move to 3 because 2 is missing. So Rabbi Yochanan says, well, let's see, where does the property end up? According to the Braita, the property ended up with Yorshim of number 1. Rabbi Yochanan says, that works well according to me, because Kinyan HaPeirot K'Kinyan HaGuf Domi. Therefore, even though the Rishon, number 1, only had the right to use the property and then pass it to number 2, and number 2 only had the right to use the property and pass it to number 3, nevertheless, when the chain was broken, number 1's Kinyan HaPeirot is also a Kinyan HaGuf. And therefore, the property remains with number 1. It makes sense according to me. You, according to you, Rish Lakish, if you have Kinyan HaPeirot, that doesn't entitle you to any Kinyan HaGuf. So it should revert back to the grantor. It should revert back to the giver or bequeather of the gift, because all you had was a leasehold. You only have a leasehold, the principal remains with the original grantor, and it never reaches the intended recipient, number 3. So therefore it should return back. How come it says, goes to the Yorshei HaRishon? So the Abai Rish Lakish answers, Acharecha Shaini. Rish Lakish's answer is, Acharecha Shaini, you misunderstood. You think that a daisy chain gift is really number 1 and number 2 have a kinyan HaPeirot, and number 3 has the kinyan HaGuf if it reaches him. That's not right. What it turns out is that number 1 has a kinyan HaPeirot and kinyan HaGuf. Number 2 has a kinyan HaPeirot, kinyan HaGuf, and so does number 3. And it's a remainder trust, which means that whatever one leaves over, 2 will get. But if one leaves nothing over, there will be nothing for number 2. And number 1 has the right to do whatever they please with that property. They can sell it. They can use it up. They can ruin it. Their choice. Whatever's left over, number 2 will get it. If there's nothing left over, number 2 will get nothing. So that's what Rish Lakish says. You misunderstood. This daisy chain grant, a remainder trust, is not a Kinyan HaPeirot that turns into a Kinyan HaGuf with the last recipient. No, it's a Kinyan HaGuf all the way along. And each individual along the chain can use it. So then we gave the halacha at the end. Amar Lei Kvar Targum Rav Oshia Bevel Archa Shani gives the same explanation as Rish Lakish. V'chein Rami Rabba Baravuna Kamei Rav before Rav Amar Acharecha Shani. He says Acharecha Shani like Rish Lakish's explanation. Now the Gemara now is going to ask a question. It's a machlokas here between the Rashbam and Tosfot who this question's on. All right, I'll read it like the Rashbam first. He says V'atanya Yachzuru LiYorshei Notein. We have a brisa that says that it returns until the Yorshei HaNotein, means to the original grantor. It'll go back. If the gift fails somewhere along the chain, it reverts back to the grantor. Now, who does that work well for? Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish can explain that and simply say, Kinyan HaPeirot, Lav Ki Kinyan HaGuf Domi. The trust or the granted gift is only Kinyan HaPeirot. And therefore, when it fails anywhere along the way, the principal reverts back to the grantor. But how is Rabbi Yochanan going to explain this? Rabbi Yochanan's belief is that even if it's just Kinyan HaPeirot, that's sufficient to give you Kinyan HaGuf. So how could you have a brisa that says it returns to the grantor? According to Rabbi Yochanan, there should be never a case where it goes back to the grantor or to the giver of the gift over here. Why? Because according to Rabbi Yochanan, either it makes it to its final recipient, which is number 3, or everybody in between has a Kinyan HaPeirot. So wherever it stops in between on that chain, they will also have a Kinyan HaGuf, because they have a Kinyan HaPeirot and should remain with them and their Yorshim. So the Gemara answers Tanahi. That is a Machloket Tanaim. Now Machloket Tanaim, according to Rabbi Yochanan, only according to Rabbi Yochanan will it be a Machloket Tanaim. Why? Because according to Rish Lakish, it does not have to be a Machloket Tanaim. And we'll see this in a second. I'm going to read through the sugya and I'll explain this. It's not Tatanya. We have a brisa Nechsei Lecha V'Acharecha Leploni. So he says, I'm granting you property or a gift, and after you to so-and-so, V'Yared Rishon U'Machar V'Acham. And the first individual received the gift, goes down and eats it and sells it. Hasheni motzei miyad lekuchot divrei Rabbi. The second individual can go to the purchasers of the property and take it away. After the death of the Rishon, he can go and take it back and say, it's mine, it's rightfully mine. He only had a right to sell you, what we call the kinyana peirot. He only had a right to sell you kinyana peirot. He didn't have to say right to sell you the underlying principal. So when he dies, his kinyana peirot day is expired, and I'm coming to get my properties. The sheni can do that. That's what Rebbe says. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel on the other hand says, in the sheni, ala mashashia rishon. Right, the second individual only has what's left over by number one. That sounds like kinyana peirot, kinyana guftami. You have a full kinyan over here, and that'll be the machlokas that Rabbi Yochanan says. We have a machlokas tanaim that Rabbi believes kinyana peirot kinyan lav kinyana guftami, and that he'll be the author of the position in the brisa that says yachzru liyoshein otain. And then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes kinyan peirot kinyan ha guftami. And he'll be the author of the Braisa that says that it remains with the Yorshei HaRishon. So that'll be Rabbi Yochanan's explanation. You're right. This Braisa I can't agree with. But that's the position of Rebbe. I hold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that Kinya Perotzki, Kinya Gufta. I mean, I don't have any problem. So that's what will be the way that Rabbi Yochanan explains it. On the other hand, Rish Lokish can explain this Braisa as being Kinyana Perot, Lav Kinyana Guftami. Everybody agrees. Both Rebbe and Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel agree that Kinyana Perot, Lav Kinyana Guftami. What do they argue about? Acharecha Shaini. They argue about whether Acharecha is different. Meaning that Rebbe will say Acharecha is not Shaini, that it's Kinyana Perot, Lav Kinyana Guftami. Therefore, number one has only a Kinyana Perot here and no more. And because he doesn't have Kinyana Perot, it's Lav Kinyana Guftami. He does not have Acharecha Shaini. And therefore, it'll go back to the Notain. It'll go back to the grantor. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes also that Kinyana Perot, Lav Kinyana Guftami. So why does he say that whatever the first one has goes to whatever the first one takes is done and the second one gets nothing? That is because Acharecha Shaini. That's exactly what Reish Lakish stipulated before, that Acharecha Shaini. And therefore, even though in general, Kinyana Perot, Lav Kinyana Guftami, here will be an exception. An exception in the case, because of Acharecha Shaini, changes it into not just a Kinyana Perot, but rather also a Kinyan Ha Guf. I mean, now why does that help you? It helps you because the Rishbam is after, or trying to solve a problem that is, we paskin like Reish Lakish, the Kinyana Perot, Lav Kinyana Guftami. Number two, we also paskin like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Paskin like Reb Shimon Gamliel that only what's left over by the Rishon, right, is granted to the Sheni. So how can you reconcile between them, or how can you have it that Reish Lakish works out with Reb Shimon Gamliel? You do exactly this, the way the Rishbam explained it. That everybody agrees to Reish Lakish's position of Kinyan Perot Lav Kinyan Guftami. The only question is Acharecha Shaini. Over there we paskin like Reb Shimon Gamliel. But Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel both agree that Reish Lakish is right. The Kinyan Perot Lav Kinyan Guftami. That's the way the Rishbam explains it. On the other hand, the Rishbam had to change the Girsa to do that, which is always right, somewhat problematic, because the Girsa that read before, or that read that the Rishbam changed over here, which Tosfos will try to uphold over here, is not that that here Tanaihi, but rather Acharecha Shaini Tanaihi. He says that Acharecha Shaini is a Machloket Tanaim. So the way the Tosafot reads the question here is that Bahatanya, we have a Braisa that Yachzuru Yorshei Notein, that it goes back to the grantor. Wait. If it goes back to the grantor, then we don't say Acharecha Shaini. So where do you ever find, and this is the question, Reish Lakish, where do you ever find Acharecha Shaini? We have a Braisa here that seems to suggest that it's Yachzuru Yorshei Notein, which says Acharecha is not Shaini. Now, you want to suggest that there's such a machlokas tanaim, that Acharecha Shaini, where do you find such a thing? We don't know of any machlokas tanaim. And that's what the Gemara answers. No, Acharecha Shaini tanaim. We do have evidence to that. And that is the machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel. Machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel. And this is all in the position of Reish Lakish, as opposed to, right, as opposed to what the Rishbam explains, that this is all that Reish Lakish doesn't have to explain here any machlokas tanaim about kinyan peirot. Right, he could just suggest that kinyan peirot lav kinyan guvdami, and their machlokas is about Acharecha Shaini. But what Tosfos is suggesting, that the fact that they argue about Acharecha Shaini is all in Reish Lakish. That's it. Rav Lekesh's position, which demands Acharecha Shaini, is a Machlokas Tanaim. And that's what the reference to the Braitot over here is. And again, that will reconcile with Reish Lakish, because again, it's in the Braitot, they're arguing about Acharecha Shaini, but Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the position that Acharecha Shaini does work. That will work well for Reish Lakish. Rav Lakish says, Kinyan Aperot Lav Ki Kinyan Guvdami, plus he says Acharecha Shaini. So we can pass on like Reish Lakish, and we can pass on like Rav Shimon Ben Gamliel. Okay, so that's the
test. The machlok between Rabbi and Rav Shimon Gamliel is the same machlok as Rabbi Yochanan and Shlakish?
No, it's the machlok is of Acharecha Shaini. It's machlok is, does Acharecha Shaini apply or not over here? Right, but the question is, in who's the, when the Gemara says Tanaihi, who's that about? According to the Rishbam, Tanaihi is in Rabbi Yochanan. In Rabbi Yochanan, according to the Rishbam, Rabbi Yochanan has to say it's a machlokas Tanaim, because he cannot explain the machlokas of Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Ella, in Cain, he says that there's a machlokas of Kinyan Peirot, Kinyan Guvdami or not. So that's why he has to explain Rabbi Yochanan.
Isn't universal.
Right. Right. His opinion is not universal according to the Rishbam. According to the Tosafot, this has nothing to do with Rabbi Yochanan, and has nothing to do with Kinyan Peirot, Lavki Kinyan Guvdami. It's nothing to do with the position or the argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. It's simply within the position of Reish Lakish, do we say Acharecha Shaini or not? And that's the machlokas over here. So why is that important? Tosafot makes the point, or why is it important here? It's because there are many Tanaim that argue about Kinyan Peirot, Lavki Kinyan Guvdami. We have multiple machlokot throughout Shas about this. So why would you bring this specific brisa over here? You could, that it's a machlokas Tanaim, we know. So he says, it can't be that the Gemara is discussing Kinyan Peirot, that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is a machlokas Tanaim. That you don't need to bring a brisa, and why this particular brisa? The only reason to bring this brisa is to deal with Acharecha Shaini, which is in the position of Reish Lakish. So that's the difference between the Rishbam and the Tosafot. The Rishbam says that Rabbi Yochanan's position of Kinyan Peirot Lav, Kinyan Guvdami is a Machlokas Tanaim, not universal. As opposed to Reish Lakish's position, who is universal. According to Tosafot, the problem here is in the position of Reish Lakish, nothing to do with Kinyan Peirot or not, but it has to do with Acharecha Shaini. And within Reish Lakish, there's a Machlokas Tanaim, whether Acharecha Shaini applies or not. Right now, the Gemara says, "Ruminhi, we have a problem. We have a stira on this brisa that we just brought. Nechsay decha, v'acharecha leponi, yored rishon u'mocher ve'ochel divrei Rabbi." So over here, it sounds like the first one could go down, sell and eat. That's the position of Rabbi. The opposite of Rabbi said in the previous brisa. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, "En rishon el achilat peirot bilvad." And now Reb Shimon Gamliel says he only has achilat peirot. Again, the opposite of his position in the previous brisa. So kasha de Rabbi ad Rabbi. Right, there's a stira between the two brayto. Basically, they've reversed their positions. If you look at the two brayto, the positions have been flipped. So the Gemara says, the Rebbe, the Rebbe lo kasho, Rebbe's position is not a problem. How the gufa, how the peira. Depends what you're speaking about. When it comes to the principle, the einlein, gufa karko, over there, Rebbe says that the Rishon has no rights to sell it, has no rights to do anything with it, and therefore the Sheini can come along and take it away from the kuchot. On the other hand, what he does have a right to do is sell the peirot. He can sell the leasehold. He can sell what he owns of the property. Again, at the end, when he passes away, it will terminate the sale. But the sale can exist for the what he owns, and what he owns is the peirot over here. Well, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, again, you do own the principal, and you have a right to sell the principal over here, and have it that it will not ever reach the Sheini, except we have what's the chatchila and what's b'diavad. The chatchila, we tell you, don't do it. Why? Because then you're not mikayim divrei ha-notain or divrei ha-meit. Either one, you're not doing what they wanted. They wanted it to be a remainder trust. They wanted something to be left to number two. If you go ahead and sell it, it's true you have the right to do that. But on the other hand, you're really undermining or almost flaunting the will of the grantor of this gift. The will of this grantor was that it should something should end up with the Sheini. So the Chatkila, we say you don't do it. Bidyevid, if you did do it, is good. It works. Because you have a full Kinyan over here. Whether you have a full Kinyan because of Acharecha Shaini, or you have a full Kinyan because Kinyan Peirot, Kinyan Guftami, either way, you have a full Kinyan over here, and therefore, if you do it, it's done. So that'll be how we reconcile between Rebbe in the two Breitot, then Rebbe Shimon Gamliel and Shimon Gamliel in the Breitot. So Amar Abaye suggests over here, Ezehu Rasha Arum, who is a terrible Rasha, someone who is right, doing for naught. Zeh Masi Eitzal Bimkor Bin Echasim Kerb Shimon Gamliel. This is someone who advises an individual who got a remainder trust to act like Rav Shimon Gamliel's position, which means to go and sell it. Be the Rishon, monetize the whole thing, and have nothing go to the second one. Why is he called the Rasha Rum? So the Rishbam over here points out that it's only the Masi Eitzah, the one who advises, that it is considered to be a Rasha Rum. Why? Because he's a Chote Ve'eno Lo. Here, he's giving advice to someone else to undermine the will of the grantor, but he gets nothing out of it. He doesn't gain anything from this. At least with the Rishon, you can say,
he sells it,
he gets the value of it. Meaning that, okay, we prefer you don't do it. But in the end, he does own it, number one. And number two is, if he sells it, he gets the money. So therefore, we don't call
him.
Right, he gave him a gift in that manner. So therefore, we're not going to call him a Rasha in that case. We prefer if you don't do it. It's better that you don't do it, but you're not a Rasha. On the other hand, a Masih Itza, someone who tells someone to do that, again, they're not benefiting themselves in any way. They're causing the divrei of the notain to go become null and void in a sense, because they'll never reach the Shini. There we call him a Rasha Urum. Now we're going to have a Psak Alok over here. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Alokha Krab Shimon Gamliel. That's the statement. Again, the Alokha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. That's what we said before, why the Rashbam was trying to reconcile between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, is because we paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and we paskin like Reish Lakish. So Tosu solved the problem just by saying that Rav Shimon Gamliel is talking about Charecha Shaini, and therefore there's no machlokas here about Kinyan Aguf ki Kinyan Perot Dami. So Reish Lakish says Kinyan Aguf, Kinyan Perot Kalav ki Kinyan Aguf Dami, and Rav Shimon Gamliel is talking about Charecha Shaini. So we don't have any problem passing the lach like both of them. The Rashbam reconciled by saying that everybody agrees, according to Reish Lakish, Rabbi and Rav Shimon Gamliel agree that Kinyan Perot Lav ki Kinyan Aguf Dami. Over here, they're arguing about a Charecha Shaini, and we pass the Lecha like a Charecha Shaini, fine. But that has nothing to do with Reish Lakish's position in Kinyan Peirot. Kinyan Peirot, Lav Ki Kinyan Aguf Dami. Nevertheless, the Lecha is, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, that when it comes to remainder trusts, if the first one abuses his right, or abuses his right, depending how you view it here, and consumes the entirety of the gift, such as it, number two will not get it at all. Now the Gemara is going to introduce, according to number of Marayim, exceptions that rule and test those exceptions. Umodeh, Rabbi Shimon Goy agrees, Shim Natan b'matanat Shchiv Meira. If he grants it as a Shchiv Meira, lo asa klum. Now, as a Shchiv Meira doesn't literally mean he has to be a Shchiv Meira. It could be a Shchiv Meira, or it could be a Bari that says Mayom l'achar mita. Right, either way, where the gift is only effective after death. Now, who's gifting it over here? Number one. Number one, recipient number one says to his, say he says to his good friend, or he says to his son, listen, I want all my property to go to you. And he's either a Shechem Meira, or he says, Meyom Alachar Mita, he was a Bari. When does that go effective? When does his gift go effective for number one? Goes effective only Lachar Mita, after he's dead. Now after he's dead already, the grantor already gave instructions that when you die, it goes to number two. So his instructions proceed. My time. That the matnat shchiv meira only happens after death, and the grantor already preceded you in instructions. His instructions were that it should go to the next person. Now, you could read this one of two ways. I'll tell you, the Rishbam does not read it the way I simply read it just now, which is that you have both gifts to be, or could be, are granted really after the death of the Rishon. The Rishon says, I'm granting it to whomever when I pass away. And that happens, when does that go effective? When he dies. The grantor also said, listen, when you die, number one, it goes to number two. So when does that go effective? It also goes effective after the death. So who came first? The grantor came first. So the grantor's rights will be precede the rights of the recipient, or recipient number one. And therefore, we go after the grantor. That's not what the...
Why does it matter who we said first?
So that's what the Rishbam says. The Rishbam over here says it's irrelevant. And if they were both affected by Chamita, they'll be Chokim. Yeah. They'll split it. The only question here is, right, who goes first? And so the Rishbam then says, a grantor does not grant the gift until you die. He says to the Rishon, listen, after you die, it goes to number two. That doesn't mean literally after you die, it goes to number two, but rather, when it's no longer useful to you, it goes to number two. When is it no longer useful to you? When you're on your deathbed. When you're on your deathbed, you have no use of the perot of the property anymore. What are you going to do with the perot of the property? You're dying. You're about to die. So a moment before you die, it's useless to you. That moment before you die, it's useless. That's when it passes to number two. That's the way the Rishon formulates in order to avoid the problem. Right. Well, it's not done derech yusha. It's done derech matana. And a matana, you can do it any way you want. Miyom achamita, he says clear, it only goes effective lachamita. That's what he's saying. That's only effective after I die. There he's stipulating explicitly that it's only after I die. The Rambam, again, formulates it in the end, is that it's the point of gift or point of exchange of control is different. Whereas when it comes to a grantor, he makes the gift goes to the next person as soon as it becomes useless in terms of payroll to you. Whereas a shchemira only becomes effective after death, and therefore the property is gone before you can grant it as a shchemira. So now the Gemara says, wait a minute. Is that really true? Umi Rabbi Hachi. Did Rabbi ever say such a thing? Vayitmar matnat shchemira me matai kana. When does a matnat shchemira go effective? Vayamar im gemar mita. Rabbi says, before you die. Rava Amar la'achar gemar mita. So Rabbi Yochanan Rava says that the matnat shchemira goes effective after death. When you die, after you've died, that's when it goes effective. According to Abaye, it goes effective a moment before you die, or sometime a little bit before you die. When you're on your deathbed, when it's going to be irretractable that you're going to die, that's when it goes effective. Why does that matter? It matters in this case, over here, where the gift that was granted with a remainder trust is going to pass at that time, then you can get yourself in there by having it be in matnat shchemira. So, where it says, Hadar bei Abaye mehayi. Baye reverses his position on this, and therefore everybody would agree that a matnat shchemira is only effective achar mita. Almost said. Right. It's a.
What is it?
It's just when did the chachamim establish that the matnat shchemira changes of control happens? That's it. That's basically what the argument is. Right. That's what Rava says, and again, Abaye agrees to that. But the first point we had Abaye suggesting that maybe not. That maybe right the moment before he dies, that's when the effective control changes. It might have been that the Chachamim wanted to be mitakein, that it happens when he's still alive in some sense, because achar mita there's no form of kinyan. So even though matnat shchemira is not working with real kinyanim, they still wanted to make it work at a time when kinyanim could have been effective. That's what you could say according to the shita of Abaye. Now, Hatmar says, "Mimai debahai hoderbe." How do you know that Abaye changed his mind? Dilma mihahadarbe. Maybe he reversed his opposition. Maybe he reversed his position about explaining why Rabbi Shimon Lamuel doesn't apply to a matnat shchemira. How do you know he reversed his position? His machlokas with the Rabba. Where it says, that won't be the case. It's not. We have a Mishnah. Mishnah by Gitin. Zeh giteich im meiti. This is your get if I die, meaning if I die, after I die, if I die, it will be what? It'll be a get. Zeh giteich micholi zeh. If I die from this sickness, this is your get, meaning after I die. Zeh giteich lachar mita, or this is your get achar mita. Lo amar klum. He said nothing. Why? So, why lo amar klum? Because we see from this that the instructions of a shchemira, or anything that a person instructs, they think that's going to happen lachar mita. Since it's going to happen lachar mita, there's ain't get lachar mita. If ain't get lachar mita, there is no, all these gitin are ineffective, or they don't work, they're invalid. So that's why, if that's the case, we see from the Mishnah that it's clear when a person makes a statement about either mita or is thinking about mita, that the effectiveness of that statement is only lachar mita. Rav also says it's lachar mita. So everybody agrees that it's lachar mita now. If it's effective lachar mita, that would tell you that a matnat shchemira will not be valid to upend the gift of the original grantor. The grantor said for you and then after you to someone else, right? Then his gift precedes the one who says matnat shchemira, the recipient number one who says it's only after my death it will be effective, or I'm granting it as a shchemira. That will happen after it's already moved to number two, and therefore he has no rights to do it. So that exception will stand. Even if the part of the original gift to recipient number one included Eved Kenani or Avadim Kenaniim, in that case, if he frees the Avadim Kenaniim, it's effective. He works. Why? He owns the Eved Kenani, and he can do what he as he pleases, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So therefore, if he frees them, they won't end up with the Sheni. Where says Peshitta? Of course. That's exactly what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says. You have a right to do whatever you want. So Rabbi says, Ma'adu teima. He says, what you would have said is that lo amar lei lemei avadi sura, or you can say amar lei lemei avadi sura lo ayavin lecha. I didn't grant you this gift to do something wrong. What do you mean do something wrong? We know that freeing l'shachrer eved kenani is over in Isra Seh. It's an Isra Seh, which is that olam bahem tavodu, that you always have to subjugate them. If you free them, you violate any sort. So it might be that we would speak on behalf of the grantor and say, listen, the grantor only granted you this to do the proper, what's proper with the gift you were given. Here you're doing something improper. That's not what he intended. The answer is, Kamash Malan, no, he gave it to him full, it's full and free and clear he's given to him, and he may do as he please. Do as you please means even if you make a mistake or you do something wrong with it, that too will be upheld because the gift is fully yours. That's the Kamash plan over here. Amar Rab Yosef, Amar Rab Yochanan, Alocha Krab Shimon Gamliel. Again, Alocha Krab Shimon Gamliel. V'afilu asan tachrichin demeit. Even if he takes what was granted to him, say for instance he has bigadim or he has some sort of cloth that was given to him, and he makes them into tachrichin demeit, it works. Gemara says pshita. Again, it's pshita. That's exactly what Rab Shimon Gamliel says. First one is given the full rights to the gift to do as he pleases. Gemara says ma'udu teinu lo shavino nisereinu lo yavin lach. The grantor could say to him, listen, I granted it for you to get utility out of this item. To get utility out of this item, and then for that utility afterwards to pass to the next individual. What I didn't grant it to you for was to make it into Surah or not. To terminate its utility. Look, if you sell it, that's fine. But to have it around and then terminate its utility by making it into Surah or not, that I didn't grant it to you. So the Mashmalan is no. When you're given a full gift, it means full. Full, free and clear, full gift means you can do as you please. One of those things is to make it into Surah or not. If you want, you can make it into Tachrichim. Right now we're going to move on to a sugya about etrog.
Is that similar
that the grift?
Right.
I wouldn't call him exactly a shliach, but some form, right? That we it's numdin adat. I think you'd have to say that the grantor did not intend for this to happen. That maybe he granted you full rights, but he gave you full rights within a misgeret, within a context, and you're now outside of that context. I think that's how you would have to formulate it. Right now, we're going to move to a sugya now about etrog, which is going to have implications, and it's major halachic implications, the maaseh. It's a shas sugya. I'll give you some of the mikorot. It's a great iyun sugya. I have some of the mikorot. I'll post them for you so that you can look at them at your own will later on, but just so that you know and are aware of what the issues are here. So now, Darash Rav Nachum Bar Rav Chista, etrog zend natun lecha b'matana, v'acharecha leploni, says, I'm granting you this etrog, and then from after you to someone else. So now, the first one takes it and uses it to be, you'll say, his mitzvah of lulav. This is a machlokas between Rebbe and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So the suggestion over here is that the fact that he's yotzei with this etrog is dependent on kinyan peirot, kinyan guf dami. Meaning that how much of this etrog that you own over here will determine whether you're yotzei. If you think kinyan peirot lav, kinyan guf dami, you will not be yotzei. If you say kinyan aguf, you will be yotzei etrog. So matil rav Nachman Yitzchak. Al ad kan lo pligi Rabbi Rishim Galil hatam el demar sever kinyan peirot kinyan aguf dami. Umar sever kinyan peirot lav kinyan aguf dami. So over there, the machlokas is about kinyan aguf, which actually supports the position of the Rashbam. Right, the Rashbam who said before that the machlokas in Rabbi Rishim Galil is about kinyan peirot, they're not about echarecha shiny. That supports the way he read the Gemara earlier. Ela hocha. Here the issue has nothing to do with kinyan peirot. Like we don't. Ela hocha imepik lo mafik bei lamayavi lene. If he takes it and he's not yotze with it, what purpose does the etrog have? Right. What did he give it to him for? What is the kinyan of peirot in an etrog for? I mean, now what are the possibilities of what you do if he gives you a peirot? What does he give you the etrog to do with it? Give me a possibility. Eat it. Then why does he want you to give it to the next person? There is nothing going to remain. If he thinks, I know that you're going to get from this etrog is to eat it, then there's nothing left for number two. So why else is he giving the etrog, Ella im kein, he wants you to be yotzei with the etrog, and then pass it on to number two. That must be the case. Ella meipik de kuli amalo pligi de nofik bei. Everybody agrees that you're yotzei when it comes to an etrog over here.
Why?
All right. Why? So that's what the Rashbam says over here. It says, v'lachem karinen bei. It's called v'lachem. Why? The ein l'sheni koach bo kuzman shro'u l'zei arishon l'tzei bo. Number two has no rights in this etrog as long as number two has the ability to, as long as number one has the right to be yotzei in it. V'lo dami l'etrog shel shutvim. By etrog shel shutvim, we say it's not l'chem. Why? There you can't be yotzei. Because there, each individual has a right of ownership in the etrog. Over here, number two has no rights of ownership in the etrog until number one has been yotzei. Because, again, because of what? Because otherwise, right, the intention of the gift. What else can he do with an etrog? He can't do. If I say kinyan peirot, number one is a kinyan peirot in the etrog, and after him it has to end up with number two. What is a kinyan peirot in an etrog? The only thing a kinyan etrog could be is to do the mitzvah. So now, the understanding here is that the gift is given to you to be, let's say, and after you, it'll go to the sheni, meaning that you have a kinyan aguf. Until you're yotzei with the etrog, the kinyan peirot is a grant to be Yotzei in this, meaning that the Sheni is knocked out of the picture until you've been Yotzei. Once you've been Yotzei, the Sheni enters the picture, and then what's left for you is only Kinya Peirot, and it will revert to the Sheni when you die, or whatever the stipulations of the gift are. Then it'll move to the Sheni. Machra o achla, if you ate it, or you sold it, banu l'machlokas Rebbe Rav Shimon Gamliel. That is the machlokas between Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel. So Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel only, or their machlokas only revolves around how good a Kinyan Aguf do you have here, or how great are your rights over here? According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, your rights are so good that not only can you be Yotzei, but you can also sell it, eat it, you can do what you please. So according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, it makes sense that you Yotzei. But even according to Rebbe, who says over here, you may not be Ochel, or you may not be Mocher, this is what the Rishbam says, Hainu Peirot. These are the Peirot. The Peirot is to be Yotzei. Kamash V'lon, Delit Lo, Letzepo, Hainu Peirot, Shnatan Rishon, Vaguf Natan L'Sheni. That is the definition of Peirot over here. The definition of Peirot is... is itziat? So that's exactly what the kinyan aguf to the sheni is suspended until you've been yotzei the mitzvah. That's exactly what happens here. There's a suspension of the kinyan aguf. You have kinyan aperot from now until you die, or whatever the stipulation is by the grantor. The kinyan aguf will remain with you till you're yotzei, and then it will revert to the sheni because that kinyan aguf is intended for you to be yotzei, but simply to be yotzei, nothing else. It's as if there's a condition built into it. Yeah, so then, no, there may not be enough, because that was not the stipulation. It was only, I was granted a Kinyan Aguf to be Yotzei. That Kinyan Perot only works. That's what it sounds like from Rebbe. Right? You have difficulty, then you have Rav Shimon Gamliel, who is agrees with your position, that if you own it, you own it, and that's it. So that's Amir Yotzei. Right, and Allah
Rav Shimon Gamliel.
Right, you could be. It could be. You could be. I don't know what that means, but yes, I guess you could say that. I'm not sure exactly what that means. Right. I'm saying either you have to say that it's a, right, that there's a Kenyan, a limited Kenyan Aguf, which is sufficient, or like you're suggesting, you have to have some sort of, right, there's some sort of difference, right, in them. It's a conditional Kenyan Aguf, or it's a different type of Kenyan Aguf. You have to say one of those two things for Rebbe. Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Achin Shikanu Etrog B'Tfusat Abayit. Brothers who go ahead and use the estate to purchase an etrog. They take money from the estate and purchase the etrog, which means that they are joint owners of the etrog. Now, lo echad mehem b'yatzah bo, if one of them used it to be yotzei the mitzvah of lulav, im yachol achlo yatzah. If he can eat it, then he's yotzei. B'imlav lo yatzah. If not, he won't. Meaning that if he ate this etrog and the other brothers would not be makpid, then he's yotzei the mitzvah. Why? Because then it's really lachem. Then it's really his. Because the estate owns numerous etrogim. And his eating of this etrog won't bother the other brothers because there are other etrogim here. So if it won't bother the other brothers, he has enough ownership to be called lachem because he could eat it and then he can be yotzei the mitzvah. On the other hand, if the brothers would object to him eating it, that means that he doesn't have full ownership here. The brothers are objecting because they have partial ownership. If they have partial ownership, they're objecting. That means you're not yotzei the mitzvah because it's not lachem, it's not yours. If it's not yours, you cannot be yotzei. So the difference will be, now there's a line in the Gemara that says here, v'davka dik etrog d'chol chad v'chad. That's only as long as there's an etrog for everyone else, meaning that there's enough for everybody else to go around for everyone else, and that's why they're not makpid over here. The last piece of this Gemara, v'al parish o rimon lo, the Rashbam wipes out the girsa, and he says it's ta'ut, and so does Tosos, but Dochok tries to explain it. I'm going to leave it out because it doesn't make so much sense in the Gemara. It just means that if there's other fruits that match up with the etrog that is offsetting, we don't say that works. Because an etrog is worth more, is better than these other fruits, so just because they have a rimon or something else, that's not enough. But it's not necessary to say that. That's what we just said before. Only if each one of them has an etrog does it work. Because we have to have them be satisfied with what they have and not worry about what he took. If what he took they're not worried about, then he's yotzei. If they are worried about it, he is not yotzei. That's the point here. Now, the Rashbam points out that in many other places, when we say arisotechem, shumotechem, all of those there, we say that it means that shutvim are yotzei. That shutvim are chayav in those mitzvot. So how come by talit shel shutvin you are yotzei? By arisotechem you have to be mafrish chala. And truma, trumatchem, by shutvim you have to be mashrish truma. So everywhere else where we have a form of achem, there we say that everyone is yotzei or everybody's chayav. Over here we say, v'kachtem, and all of a sudden we say it has to be shalachem. That has to be yours, solely yours, and no shutvin. Why over here do we interpret it differently than anyone else? So here he says there's a difference. Because v'etrog, right, he could have said v'kachto l'cho. Why? Because it says v'kachto l'cho like v'svartem lachem. by Sfira, and we say the word Sfaratim Lachem teaches you that it has to be Sfira L'choch Echad V'Echad. Each individual must do a Sfira. As opposed to if it said Sfarat Lecha, it would be based in had to do the Sfira, right, for everybody as a whole. When it's written in the singular, it's a representative of Klai Yisrael that does it. When it's written in the plural, it means each individual in Klai Yisrael is Chayav. So over here, because if it had written Lekachto Lecha, we would have thought that it means that one person or Beis Din or whoever it is, I don't exactly understand the Havamina here, that they wanted one Lekicha would be Yotzei Motzi called Klal Yisrael. That's therefore it has to say Lekachto Lechem. It clearly means each individual here, because each individual has to take a Lubav. So you can't say Lekachtem, right, over here means, meaning Lekicha. Of plurality, of shutvot, but rather means lakach lachem, that each individual must take it. And if you say that, it's clear that the lakachtem over here, it means each individual, not shutvim. So that's what the Rashbam explains again. I'm not sure I totally understand it, because by sfira, there makes sense that there's a havamina that the Beis Din should count for everyone, because it's an issue of Klal Yisrael. The sfira is for the omer, for the karbanot, so it makes sense. Over here, what would be the havamina that Beis Din should take the lulav for everyone? It doesn't make so much sense, but that at least the Rashbam says that's the Havamina over here. And therefore here, V'lakachtem will be interpreted differently than Arisoteichem and Shumoteichem in other places. Alright, so there, that's why it means each individual and Shutfim don't work over here. Now, we come down to Amar Rava. Rava says, and this is what generates all the talk on this daf, Etrog zen natun lecha b'matana amanat shetachziru. I'm granting you this etrog as a matana amanat lachzir. It's a gift, but you must return it afterwards. Natlo v'yatzabo. Right, a person takes it to do the mitzvah of lulav. Hechziro yatza. If he returns it, he is yotzei. Lo hechziro, lo yatza. If you do not return it, you're not yotzei. Kamash malon. For now we conclude the matana amanat lachzir shma matana. And a matana with a condition to return it is a full-fledged gift. It's a full-fledged gift. You just have to be mekayim the tanai in the end. If you're mekayim the tanai in the end, then it becomes a full-fledged gift with no problem. So now, over here, had you not had Rava, you could have suggested, right, Rava takes away this possibility, but that Rava, you could have suggested that a matana, manat achzir, if I don't return it, what does that mean? It means that the matana, the gift was granted, but I wasn't machzirit, so I'm a ganav. The gift was granted, so when I was granted the gift, while I had it, it was fully mine. When I don't return it later, from that point forward, I become a ganav. So the gift is a good gift, but I become a ganav. That's not what Rava says. Rava says that the tnai, or the condition to return it, is embedded in the ownership or the grant of the gift. That is, a tnai is part of the matana, and therefore the matana will be only effective if you are mekayim the tnai. If you're mekayim the condition, then, right, you are yotzei. So the first thing that comes up, and this is, does the tanai have to be explicit over here? Does the tanai have to be explicit? The Rosh and others we've shown him over here say that the tanai here does not have to be explicit. The tanai does not have to be explicit because it's an umdana didat. It's like all those the cases we had before, where it's clear that when the individual says something, this is, we're going to interpret it that way, because it's clear that's what he meant. If the individual hands you his lulav and etrog, even if he doesn't say, I want you to be yotzei, and then right before, in davening, right before halal, he's lulav, he hands it to you to use, it's clear that he wants it back to do the mitzvah of lulav and etrog. He's not handing it to you to keep it forever. He's handing it to you because he intends to later on be yotzei the mitzvah. And if you don't return it to him with enough time to be yotzei the mitzvah, then you're not going to be, it's not a gift to you, because that's an embedded tanai or an implicit tanai in him giving it to you. It's so obvious that he wants his lulav and etrog back. So that, according to the Rishonim over here, is implicit. You don't even have to have it be explicit. Others say it has to be explicit. They write down the halacha, the Mishnah Berurah, that it's an umdana d'at. It's an umdana d'at that he expects it back. And that's the way the Paschal halacha, that the assumption is that this tanai is embedded or built into the lulav when he grants you the gift. The second problem is, okay, if you say it's an embedded tanai, or even if you say that it's an explicit tanai over here, we know that you have to have, we know what the qualifications of tanai are. What are the qualifications of tanai? It has to be a tanai kafel. It has to be a tanai kodim lamaseh. It has to be tanai and maseh lo b'davar echad. What happened to all the qualifications of tanai that come from b'nei Gad or b'nei Ruvein? If you say there has to be a condition here, and you want it to work with a condition, where are all the conditions that are laid out by the Gemara when it comes to tanai b'nei Gad or b'nei Ruvein? So the Rashbam over here is mechadesh something that says that tanai, this whole conditions of tanai b'nei Gad b'nei Ruvein only apply to Isurim. They only apply to Isurim, like get and Kiddushin, That's where they apply. But when it comes to Dinei Mamonos, you don't have to have all the qualifications of Tanai B'nei Gad and B'nei Ruvein. Here it's a case of Dinei Mamonos, and therefore you don't need all those qualifications. What's the big problem with the Rashbam? Tosfos attacks the Rashbam on this in the Gemaras, in other places by Tanai B'nei Gad, B'nei Ruvein, and Gitin, right, and other places. He says, wait a minute. What is the source for Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvein? What are they talking about over there? They're talking about Yerusha. They're talking about Mamon. So how can you, the Rashbam, suggest that Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvein only apply to Yisura and don't apply to Mamon? And don't apply to Mamon? The prime example of Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvein is about Mamon. That's what it's about. So what do you have to say for the Rashbam? So, we have to say for the Rashbam that Yerusha or Kinyan Eretz Yisrael is not just a din in Mamonos, it's a din in Isura. That there's the mitzvah, right, Kinyan Aretz or Yerushata Aretz, right, is not just a Mamon issue, it's an issue of Isura. And the source for the Rashbam is Tanai B'nei Ruvein, because there you're dealing with Isura, you're not just dealing with Mamonos. Tosfos actually goes the other way around. Tosfos suggests that Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvein only apply to, possibly, only apply to situations where there is what we call Chumra b'alma, which is that there is Chumra de Arayos, or Chumra de Kiddushin. That only in those cases do we demand that Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvein. That only in those cases do we do. But otherwise, maybe we don't demand that Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvein. That's not generally applicable, or certain of those requirements are not necessarily generally applicable. Or the other possibility is that this is a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbanan about whether you need these conditions or not. When you need those conditions, that's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Over here, we're talking about the Rabbanan who don't require those conditions. So either it's a machlokas tanaim according to Tosafot, or Tosafot says it doesn't apply to issues where it's not get and kiddushin, because those are areas where we're machmir, or we have a chumrah that we do, but not that they have general application in other places. Right? That's one issue that we have to deal with, which is the issue of tanai. The second issue you have to deal with, and this is a question that comes up, the Rashbam describes it over here, that this idea that they used to have in shul, they used to buy one lulav and etrog for everyone, right? And when they bought one lulav and etrog for everyone, they would go, everybody would come to the shul and then be yotze in it. And nobody made a tanai, nobody said anything. But it's clear, he says, that underlying that position is that there's an automatic tanai, there's an assumed condition there that everyone will take it. And that's what we stated before. The second thing he says, what happens on the second day of Yontif? On the second day of Yontif, where there's no din of Lachem, over there the Tanai will not exist. Because you don't need it. To be Yotze Miluva and Etrog on the second day, you don't need to be Lachem. So therefore, the Tanai will not be implicit. And whoever, I guess, takes it first, or whoever gets it, it's his. And everybody else is Yotze with his Miluva and Etrog. But not that that's an Umdana Danat, that there's a Tanai, because you don't need the Tanai to be Yotze the mitzvah of Lulav. So when the Tanai, or the issue of Tanai, is all about whether the person needs it back to be Yotze the Lulav. And that'll be the Umdana Danat. We will determine whether it's the Tanai is automatic or not, depending on whether he needs it to be Yotze, or he wants it to be Yotze, or he wants it to do something with his Lulav and Etrog. Now, the Gemara will continue, and then I'll come back and explain to you a little more about Matana, Mat, Chatzir, and how far it goes. So, Hayi Itata, Dehavala Dikla Ba'ara de Rabbi Barabai. She had a tree or palm tree in the fields of Rabbi Barabai, and Kolema Dehava Azla Migzari, every time she came to either pick fruits or cut branches off of it, Avakabaraloi, he, Aliyah. He would be upset at her. Don't step on my fruits, don't step on my vegetable patch over here. She had to walk through his field to get to the dekel. And so he was upset at her that she kept ruining his stuff. So she got upset. So Aknite Nihale Koshne Chayav says, listen, you know what? Just take the dekel. For the rest of your life, the dekel is yours. So what does Rabbi Barabai do? Azaliu Akne Nihale the Bno Akatan. He goes ahead and gifts it or grants it to his Bino, his young child, his minor child. Why would he do that? Why would he grant it to his young child? Because either one of two possibilities, either he wanted to give it to someone who has an irrevocable gift, because a katan can receive, can be koneh, but not makneh, or the possibility here is Bino Katan is because he's somech al shulchano. The Bino Katan is eating on his table, and therefore when he gives it to his young son, he'll still get the benefit of the fruits. But why did he do this? He did this because of the remainder trust, the position of Shimon Gamliel. Shimon Gamliel says, if you give something to the first, and then it goes to the second afterwards, if you sell it as the first, it's done. So over here, what did he do? He sold it to his Bino Akatan. He gave it to his Bino Akatan. So therefore, he blocks it forever going back to this woman. It's Amar Rav Huna Breid Rav Shua Mishum Da'ata Mumulai Yarmito Milei Muliyata. Because you're a Mumulai, it's Machlok Kasir. The Rabbeinu Gershom says Mumulai means you're from Beit Eli. Rashbam says Mumulai is the name of a place where the people from Beit Eli lived. Amrita Milei Muliyata, you said words that were not, that are either a pile of dirt or empty or not meaningful. Why? Afilu Rav Shimon Lo Kamar Lacher Avalat Smoldo. Rav Shimon Lomeo only says his din when it goes to another party. Meaning that the remainder trust goes to number two. I give it to recipient number one, and after he dies, it goes to recipient number two, then it goes to recipient number three. In that case, if recipient number one uses it all up, right, then we say, listen, number two gets nothing. But if he grants it to this individual as a kinyan peirot and says, after you die, it comes back to me, the grantor says it comes back to me, there it's clear that number one is not granted a right to sell it, to do whatever he wants with it. It's clearly there that it's a gift, but peirot, because the grantor expects it back for himself. If he expects it back for himself, then he clearly does not grant it to you, do whatever you want with it. In that case, it's going to come back. So over here, you did something, it's not going to work. No, over here, she granted him the palm tree, kol yimei chayav. As long as you're alive, right, Rabbi Barabai, it's yours to use. But after you die, it comes back to me, or my Yerushim. Comes back to me, the woman. So in that case, he says, no way. In that case, you cannot do like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you cannot accomplish removing it from the property of the grantor. So now, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman. By the way, the Rashbam says that this case of Amar Rav Nachman belongs above or before the case that we just read in the Gemara. This shore is given to you as a gift on the condition you give it back to me. Hekdisho. In the interim, he was makdishit. Vekziro, and then he gave it back to him. Harizeh mukdash. It works. Umukzar, and it's given back. You were makdishit, and you hand it back to him. Basically, you're saying, Harishocha lefanecha. Here you have it. So Amar Rava, Rav Nachman, my hadre. What did he give back to him? He gave him something that is owned by Hektish. Now he doesn't own it anymore. He can't do anything with it. How can you call that a chazara? Samalei, umay chazrei. What's he missing over here? He gave him a shore, and he got a shore back. What is he missing? He said to return it to me. He returned it. He doesn't own it anymore, but he returned it to him. So Amar Rava, Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says over here, okay, it's just interesting to point out that Rava asked Rav Nachman a question after he quoted something in the name of Rav Nachman. He says, Amar Rava, Amar Nachman. And then Amar Rava, Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman questioned that which he quoted in the name of Rav Nachman. It's interesting that Gemara flow in the Gemara like that. El Amar Ravashi Chazina. If he just says, on condition you return it, Hayadre, he returned it. If he says, you return it to me, so it depends on his lashon. If he just simply says, you return it, then as long as you return the animal, you're good. You return the animal, you're fine, because you accomplished what he asked you. He didn't tell you that it has to be usable, it just has to give it back. But on the other hand, if he says that I want to return to me means for me to use. If it's to me to use, then it's clear over here that if you don't return it in a usable position, that you don't get it. So now this comes down to the question of matanah manak nachzir, which is how much do you own of a matanah manak nachzir? How much, what do you have to own in order to have what we call ownership? What is ownership? Now this goes back to the Gemara beforehand, the Tosos on Kuf Lamed Dalet. The Kuf Lamed Dalet Tosos over there asks, the Gemara has about the matanat bnei beit choron. When I debated the Charon, the Gemara concluded, there was the last line in the Gemara. The Gemara says that, Kol matana she'eno yechol akdisha, any matana that you cannot be makdish, makdish, eno matana, it's not a real gift. So only if you could be makdishit is it classified as a real gift. If you cannot be makdishit, then it's not classified as a real gift. Over there, the Tosafot brings down two positions. Does that literally mean you have to be able to be makdishit? Or does it mean that you have to have enough ownership in order that it's not really just a harama? It's not just trying to get out of the problem of ownership. So that's the question. Tosfos over there has two deal. Tosfos happens to be machlokes through the Rishonim. When I say that you can be makdishit, does it literally mean that you have the ability to be makdishit? And only if you have the ability to makdishit, do you own it? And that makes it enough for you to own it to be yotzei or to not have to return the shore over here. Or can I say that matana, the example of hektesh is just an example. It's an example showing you that you have to give him enough ownership that he can do certain things with it, or he can do certain, he's not bound just to get around a halachic issue, it's not just the harama. So where does this come up? This comes up with mechiret chametz. What happens if someone grants the chametz to a goy as a matana al menat tachzir? Says to him, listen, this is your, I'm granting you the chametz, but you have to return it to me after Pesach. Is that considered getting it out of your possession? Are you over by your rea or by your matzeh or not? So Rambam says over there that it does not work. And your chametz, right, is your over by your rea or by your matzeh when you give him a tana machna achzir, even when the goy gives it back to you afterwards. When he gives it back to you afterwards, why doesn't it work? You granted it him as a full matana, like here by the etrog, and when he gives it back to you, the tanai was accomplished, and therefore it was a matana, a manakta akzir that was accomplished. It should have been in the goy's possession. It shouldn't be over by your rabbi matzeh. So the Rabbaz over there says an amazing thing. The Rabbaz, in explaining the Rambam, suggests that it's different. Why? Because only once the tanai is accomplished, the mafreya, retroactively, was the matana a full gift. What happens if the goy does not keep the tanai, does not return you the chametz? If he didn't return you the chametz, then the grant or the gift was never a gift. And that means that you owned it throughout Pesach, and you were over by your rabbi matzeh. That fact, that if he does not accomplish the tanai, it would have been in your possession, makes it that you're over by your rabbi matzeh until the tanai is accomplished. Until the tanai is accomplished, you violate by your rabbi matzeh. Once the tanai is accomplished, lima freya, retroactively, right, then it was a good gift. But that can't work anymore. Why? Because it's already chametz shavar lava pesach. It's already chametz shavar lava pesach. If it's chametz shavar lava pesach, you can't go back now and retroactively make it into a matana so that it supersedes by your rabbi matzeh. That's a chiddush of the Rabbaz. It's an extreme chiddush of the Rabbaz. There are others who disagree and say, no, by chametz, it should work. Why doesn't it work by chametz? It's the chumr, the chametz. It's just the chumr that we have by chametz because we're afraid if he violates the tanai, then you're going to be violating by your rabbi matzeh. So what are we worried about? We're worried that he won't give it back. If he won't give it back, then you were over by your rabbi matzeh. So we don't want that to happen. So it's a chumr by chametz. It's not that en ochanami could work by chametz. Matana matachzir could work by chametz. But it doesn't necessarily, but we just don't allow it to work there because we're afraid of the outcome. The possibility of it not being working will make it so bad because then you'll be in violation of Bayi Reba Matzeh. So Machlokus, again, whether Matanah Matachzir is full ownership in the sense that it's so full that it can work even by Chametz, or is it a full ownership but it has some strings attached, and those strings attached make it not full ownership. And that's only determined once the Tanai is done. Once the Tanai is done, then you get full ownership, but that's too late. Over there. So that's a machlokas. Now, that will have impact with other things. It doesn't necessarily mean that these two are connected, but the two could be connected. After you finish, for instance here, when you finish using the lulav, when you give it, do you have to give it back to the owner, the original owner? Do you have to be makneh it back to the original owner? When he gives you a matanah matachzir, does he give you such full ownership that when you have it, you have to now be makneh it, you have to give him a kinyan to get it back? Or, do we say it automatically reverts back to him? That's the condition of the tanai. When it happens to be that it's a machlokas, the ktos and the rosh, right? The rosh and the ktos have these two opinions, that whether when you grant the gift to someone on manat akzir, does it just automatically, once he's done what you said to do with it, or the matana has expired, does it automatically go back to the original owner's possession and he needs no kinyan? Or, do we say that he has to be makneit back to you? He has to actually give it back to you. And if he doesn't give it back to you, then the tanai is failed. He actually has to be makneit back to you. That opens the possibility that you could grant a matanah matakzir to a katan. That will depend on whether you require a kinyan back or not. If it automatically reverts back to you, maybe you could do such a thing with a katan. If it requires you to be makneit back, then the katan is not a bar makneh, and it won't work in that case. Or you could even suggest that the whole condition of the tanai is that the katan is makneh back to you. If he's not makneh back to you, then the whole gift was never gifted, and therefore the whole thing fails and it comes back to you anyway. So you could suggest it doesn't not mukhach, but it could make a difference. Then it will have nafkamino. This whole idea of whether matanah matachzir requires you to return it in the end or not return it in the end, right? We might have nafkaminos and how much you own of it. That's the question here. And that comes down to the last thing that the Rishbam mentions over here. What happens if the animal dies ba'ones on you? What happens if it was nignav o nevad? Right? Do you have to return it? Do you have to pay for it? So the Rishbam over here suggests that no, you're not a shoel. A shoel has to return something, and if something happens, aveda, gneva, and ones, then he's obligated to replace it. But you own it. During the period of time of not zero, you own it. And if something happens that's an ones, gneva, or aveda, it's not your fault that you can't return it. And you own it enough that you're not responsible for the item. Only if you're a posheya. If you're a posheya, then we say you're responsible. So Rashbam and some of the other Rishonim suggest that over here you're not chayev, gneva, aveda, and onsin. That you don't have to return it then. Other Rishonim disagree and say you have to return it. All right, in terms of ownership, in terms of your ownership of here, how good is your ownership? Is your ownership so good that you're potter from ones, gneva, and aveda because you own it? Or is it not good enough that you still are responsible for those items? Because you want to differentiate between why matanah menachta akzir you can be yotzei lulav, and why by a shoel you're not yotzei lulav. So that's exactly the difference, will be along these points. The last thing that the Rishonim argue about and discuss, the last thing that Rishonim discuss here is whether you can, if you don't return the actual item, but monetary compensation. What happens if you don't return the lulav, but you pay him what the lulav is worth? Right? Is that good enough? Amanat lachzir, does that mean literally I want the object back? And if I get the object back, it works? Or am I just saying to you, you must return me the value of the object? Meaning that if you pay me the money that it's worth, that's enough. So that's also subject to machlokes tanaim about how much you own it. If you own it so much that you can sell it, and your only requirement of the tanai, to fill the tanai, is that you give me back the value, then you can pay them the value. Or is amanat lachzir mean that you must return me the object that I gave you? You own it enough, but only enough that you give me back that object. Again, all these machlokot might be interwoven about how much ownership you have over here. But these are important machlokot in terms of the matana amanat lachzir. How does it work? Right? How effective is it? Meaning, how much ownership do you really have? And how do you accomplish the tanai in the end to return it? All three of these items will impact on the value or the matana that you're receiving in matana amanat lachzir. Okay, we'll stop over here.